Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from Costco Business Center, offering delivery to Anchorage Air Cargo companies for shipments to rural Alaska for business and home. More at CostcoBusinessDelivery.com.
Hello and welcome to Line One, your health connection. I'm your host, Dr. Justin Clark. All over the country, mental health concerns have been exacerbated by the pandemic. To make matters worse, socio-political factors are magnifying a small cluster of issues, making them seem bigger than they are. The influence of social media leads to small local issues being blown up into national and global news stories. All of this results in more worry and anxiety, less life satisfaction, and less interpersonal connection. Mental health is an epidemic in its own right. While attention on mental health has increased, the resources available have not kept up with the demand. Mental health services in Alaska are no different, and availability and access to care is stretched thin. This is particularly true for kids. However, there are more resources becoming available all the time. Today on Line One, we will be discussing what services are available for Alaska youth with mental health needs with Dr. Kurt Wangle and Counselor Kristen Mortensen. Please give us a call toll-free statewide at 1-888-353-5752, 1-888-353-5752, in Anchorage, 550-8433, 550-8433. You can also email me at line1@alaskapublic.org. That's line1 at alaskapublic.org. Well, it's a real pleasure to have you guys here today. Thank you. We're going to start by introducing Dr. Kurt Wangle, who is the CMO at Alaska Behavioral Health. It's a real pleasure to have you here, Dr. Wangle.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
I would like to give you a chance to introduce yourself to the audience and let us know kind of where you came from, what brought you to Alaska, what you do, and why you do it.
Sure. So I am from San Antonio, Texas. I went to medical school, did my post-medical school training down there, came up to Alaska really because I'm in the good fortune to be able to have a job that's high in demand as a child psychiatrist, and I could work anywhere in the country that I wanted. And so I thought, you know, where would be the best place that I could both use my talents but also have a really good life outside of work? And so Alaska is where I settled on, and so I moved my family up here, and I love it. So I've had the good fortune to grow really quickly and been able to take over as the chief medical officer. And so I work really closely with the chief operating officer and the CEO to really be able to formulate what our company is going to try to do for our community and statewide.
Yeah, no, that's great. And you've been up here a few years now?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Good, good. All right. Well, we also have licensed professional counselor Kristen Mortensen with us here today. Welcome to the show, Kristen.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about yourself and what you focus on.
Yeah, so I'm the director of outpatient services at Alaska Behavioral Health and early childhood services as well. And I'm from 3 miles down the road. So I grew up in Anchorage, Alaska, got my master's degree here at Alaska Pacific University right down the road. And I chose to study psychology really because I wanted to help serve our community and fill a need in the community as a counselor here in Alaska. And I've practiced here professionally for the entirety of my career.
Fantastic. There's few and far between those lifelong Alaskans.
Yeah.
And so I think that speaks to many, many different things. If anyone's listening out there, you know, we need our education to be in Alaska so that we can keep our great talent here as well. But we have a heavy topic today, and certainly there's been lots of news coverage about mental health in Alaska and also inpatient services. And so the timeliness of this topic is important. I think hopefully we'll get some calls today, especially about Alaska youth and the services available. And I know that's a big focus for both of you guys here. So I wanted to just get a sense to start with, like, what's going on out there right now? What is the scale, the scope of this mental health crisis? Is it a crisis, or has it always been there, or just have we more paid more attention to it? I have all these questions I want to get to, so I'm sorry if I'm scatterbrained, but let's see. Either of you can start, but kind of let's describe what's the scale and scope of the mental health crisis right now.
So I don't think this is a new issue. I do think it's getting renewed attention, and I think we're seeing an increase in children and youth seeking services in different ways and earlier in treatment than we have in the past. So we've always known in Alaska there's been a substantial need for mental health services and a substantial number of children who are impacted by adversity. Primarily adverse childhood experiences. We know the rates of exposure to adversity for kids in our state is higher than the national average. So we have kids that are experiencing abuse, neglect, exposure to domestic violence at extremely high rates. That typically translates into challenges with mental health difficulties, and that compounds over time. So our best estimates are that we have about 6% of kids 9 to 17 who are struggling within the past year with a severe emotional disturbance. When we look at older kids and youth, those numbers creep a bit higher. About 28% of youth have a present mental health condition. And that data is a bit old. So as we start to get new data post-pandemic, I think we'll start to see those numbers creep up. So we know the need is there. And those are just youth that have been identified as having a mental health concern. We know there's quite a few children and youth in our communities who are struggling that haven't been identified as needing a mental health intervention as well.
Sure. No, absolutely. And imagine there's a lot of different ways that these come to light, whether it's through, parent bringing it up or the child seeking it out directly, or maybe the school teachers finding it. Dr. Wengel, any thoughts on or if you want to add to what Kristen said there?
Yeah, I think, it's been known for a long time that Alaska has particular challenges. And I remember in medical school, we did some case studies about the presence of light and dark and how much light and dark is in your environment and how that can affect your mood. And Alaska is a great case study for that. That's, I think, probably taught in most medical schools when it comes to psychiatric education. And so we know that, and as well as vitamin D and some other things, can compound these problems. But also the nature of Alaska, and Alaskans tend to be a very kind of vibrant group who are really kind of independent. Mm-hmm. And that also breeds kind of a buck up kind of attitude, which is really good for a lot of things, but not good when you're going to that is going to induce suppression of mental health symptoms. So don't get that early intervention.
Good. So, now this is a whole topic in and of itself, but let's go through them as much as we can. Like, what are the major issues that you guys are kind of seeing? And, we can talk about national stats, or you can talk about like what you're actually seeing in your practice. But I mean, some of the ones I was thinking of course, like depression and anxiety, this whole pandemic stuff of, losing connection to your friends, although social media is doing that by itself anyway. But there's so many potential things that can impact, our mental health as adults or as children. What are you guys really seeing out there? What's on the ground? I can start with you, Dr. Wengel.
Sure. Yeah. In my clinic, I see that my day-to-day kid that's coming in, lots of depression, lots of anxiety. I will say anecdotally, I see an uptick from where I was at before pre-pandemic to post-pandemic, and it's hard to know, is that more because there's more public awareness about this, or is this really because the symptoms are getting worse? But the rate of people endorsing feelings of isolation, hopelessness, helplessness, worthlessness, those feelings seem to be growing. So kids are endorsing them more vigorously. They're just saying they're much more strenuous to deal with, as well as the amount of social media bullying that kids are endorsing to me is just skyrocketing over the last 5 years.
No, it's a real problem, and I know there's probably differences even between boys and girls with this, and we can get into that if we have time as well. It's a topic again in and of itself, and social media. But Kristen, what are you seeing in your practice?
I think we're seeing a similar parallel that what Dr. Wengel described. We're seeing older youth come in for services. Our age has started to creep up a little bit into the adolescent range is our most common client who's coming in. And while we're still seeing a lot of responses to adversity and trauma, we're also seeing general mental health concerns as being a primary concern. So lots of anxiety, lots of depression. This looks different, though, because kids are not as connected to resources as they were 4 years ago or 3 years ago. So we see kids come in who are endorsing quite a few depression symptoms, but they don't have a lot of resources to buffer the impact of that. So they're not connected to a school community, a faith-based community, things that really used to buffer kids' experiences of adversity and depression. So when we look to those resources to kind of help with treatment, there's just not a lot available for kids and families because they're not as connected as they were previously prior to the pandemic.
Yeah. No, I've heard from you know, my patients and people I see in everyday life where it's hard to find resources or hard to get an appointment, you know. But and so we're gonna go through that a little bit and see how you guys are doing your best to counteract that and, you know, provide access for the community, which is great. I just wanted to give our listeners a reminder here. Our number, toll-free, statewide, is 1-888-353-5752, 888-353-5752. In Anchorage, 550-8433, 550-8433. You can also email me, line1@alaskapublic.org. So we can bounce back to Kristen first this time, but what are we seeing, or what do you guys notice in terms of the main issues with access? You know, is it just a lack of providers, a lack of the sheer, you know, number of programs to treat the need? What are some of the issues? Transportation, school, all of that.
Yeah. So the first thing that comes to mind when I think about access, you know, I've worked most of my career in outpatient. So essentially where kids are living in their communities and with their families. And what we see is there's a lack of, there's gaps in services. So in outpatient care, our traditional model had been maybe a connection with a psychiatric provider, a primary care provider for medication, perhaps weekly outpatient therapy, but there's a whole continuum and range of services in outpatient care that haven't been available. So the gaps, I think, have been really crucial, and how do we address those gaps in care? So how do we offer more intensive services, more deep treatment programs, so that we can support kids in retaining their placement and staying with their families and not needing a higher level of care? And that kind of prevents that higher level of care when we have more intense and frequent services. The other kind of problem with access that I see is we are just learning a lot about how mental health services work and what types of mental health services are best suited for what conditions. And as we're learning that, we have the availability to provide more specialized and focused services. So knowing that, you know, a child who has attention deficit disorder is treated differently and has a different treatment option for psychotherapy than a child who has experienced post-traumatic stress disorder. So we have more specialized services that we can offer kids who have a different condition. So I think those are the two pieces around access, which I think we're kind of working to improve.
So I guess figuring out the first step is trying to figure out the problem or the main complaint with a child and identifying that. And once you kind of have a sense of what's going on, then you can direct them to the appropriate treatment pathway.
Yeah, and having choices for families and having that specialized care, I think, is pretty important.
Yeah. Dr. Wengo, what are your thoughts on the main issues or barriers to access right now?
Yeah, when I came to Alaska, I was really surprised at the way that the mental health system was set up here. It was really different from where I was at in Texas that had a really robust system. We were in a big, you know, metropolitan city, so it had every, what we would call every level of care, from outpatient to intensive types of outpatient where they're seeing someone several times a week, or a day treatment program where they're going to stay at a facility all day but not sleep there, you know, inpatient or residential where they would live there for several months. So we had all those available to us, where in Alaska you come and it was sort of, you've got inpatient, where someone's staying in an acute hospital, or you've got outpatient, and that's kind of all there was. We've since been able to build a lot of those in-between steps, which is really helpful. But we've also been able to bring up a lot of providers from the lower 48, which has helped with some of that access gap. But yeah, it was a little bit nerve-wracking and very shocking to me when I first came here. I think it's getting better, but it's because as a community, you know, we're able to work with Providence System or North Star or some of those places to recruit from the lower 48 to help. So it is getting better, mm-hmm. and that's certainly the message that I want to convey to people. It is getting better, but we're not there yet. We still have a lot of work to do.
Yeah, I think there's always going to be you know, improvements, but you know, it's great that you guys are working, you know, sounds very diligently on expanding services, you know, for Alaskans. You know, it's definitely a hard thing. What about insurance? Is funding an issue? Is state funding an issue? Do private insurances kind of cover these services?
Yeah, we don't have a lot of issues with insurance companies denying our claims. I can't speak to the inpatient side because I don't work with the billing for inpatient. But for us, they don't, you know, insurance companies don't want the kids to get hospitalized. And so if we're going to take steps, even if they're really aggressive steps, to see the kids every single day or put them in a day treatment program, which may last a couple weeks where we're seeing them all day long, you know, we can do all of that. We could see someone for 3 weeks and that's only going to cost the same amount as maybe a day or a day and a half in the hospital. So insurance companies are really motivated to pay for these services to avoid this from a fiscal standpoint, but also just from a human ethics standpoint. Yeah. You know, they don't want the kids to get worse. And so, you know, they're usually very willing to accommodate our charges.
Yeah, good, good. I want to, we have a couple calls coming in here. So maybe we'll try to get to these calls before we get into the inpatient stuff. I'll tell you what, why don't we go with line four here? We have a caller. Kristen is calling from Anchor Point. Kristen, welcome to line one.
Well, thank you for letting me come on. I'm just wondering, when you're treating with these young people, how much of the problems that they're experiencing can be associated back to, well, their environment, like their parents have mental problems and maybe alcohol, drug addiction problems, and among the peers that they are running with, especially among adolescents, are they falling into like a gang situation, which they think they have to stay in because if they don't, they'll be alone? How much of it is, I guess, environmental and rearing opposed to they just have a glitch going on in their head?
Awesome. Yeah. Kristen, great question. Thank you for your call. And I'll pose this to our experts here. We'll have you take the answer off the air if that's okay. But thank you so much for your call. Dr. Wengel, you want to field this one first?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think when you look at any type of illness, whether it's mental health or general medical, there's always going to be a genetic component that lets someone sort of get predisposed to having these, either whether it's behavior or pathology, being that depression or bipolar or whatever. And then there's going to be an environmental factor. And that environmental factor, in, you know, the way that we theorize about this is that it sort of unlocks that genetic component that may enable someone to do that. And that's true whether it's depression or schizophrenia. You know, someone is going to start running with a gang and potentially start using drugs. Even if it's marijuana, right? Dab pens and those kinds of synthetic marijuanas, we see those unlock that part of their brain where someone can start to develop psychosis and hallucinations that can often lead to a lot of behavioral problems. And then those problems don't always go away when they stop using. So I think it's a great question. And you know, there is a lot of environmental influence. And there certainly is nothing that I can do about that by prescribing a medication. But, you know, through Kristen and her team and using therapy and family therapy, they can help that family dynamic to try and improve that situation on a lot of different things.
Yeah, no, that's a great, great answer. Thank you. Kristen, do you want to comment on Kristen's question?
Yeah, sure. So I'll just speak from my clinical experience, which has primarily been in the area of child trauma. So you know, child trauma is pretty prevalent. About 70% of our clients that we see at the clinic have a stressor-related disorder, which means exactly what Kristen was referring to. Something has happened to them. What I want to stress around this is that that's preventable. So these are preventable mental health conditions. If that stressor had not existed, the child would not have developed this mental health condition, but that it's also very much treatable. So we know that we can change that trajectory, and there are really highly effective evidence-based practices that have been proven to be effective that address exactly what the caller was talking about, kind of shifting some of their responses from the adults in that child's life to be more sensitive and trauma-informed and supportive. And we can reduce those symptoms through family therapy and individual therapy as well. So we do have effective treatment protocols to address mental health difficulties that have resulted from stressors in the environment.
Great. Okay, thank you. Well, we're going to take a short mid-break here. You are listening to Line 1, your health connection. If you have a question or a comment for our guests today, call us toll-free statewide, 1-888-353-5752, 1-888-353-5752. In Anchorage, 907-550-8433, 907-550-8433. Email me at line1@alaskapublic.org. After this short break, we will continue our discussion on mental health resources for Alaskan youth with Alaska Behavioral Health Counselor Kristen Mortensen and CMO Dr. Kurt Wengel.
You're listening to Line 1 from Alaska Public Media. You can find Line 1 on alaskapublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts. One of the greatest honors for a public media station is delivering on its promise to provide quality programming and news you can trust to the communities it serves. What you hear on air is the result of a dedicated team working together to bring you the best. It's a privilege to be a part of your day. Thank you for listening, for your feedback, and for your support.
Welcome back to Line 1, your health connection on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Dr. Justin Clark. I'm joined by Alaska Behavioral Health Counselor Kristen Mortensen and CMO Dr. Kurt Wengel. Call us toll-free statewide, 1-888-353-5752, 1-888-353-5752. In Anchorage at 907-550-8433. 907-550-8433, or email us at line1@alaskapublic.org. Well, I want to get into a lot of the outpatient programs and things that you guys are offering. Prior to doing that, let's just touch on the inpatient therapy, because it's kind of a little bit of a hot and button issue. There's been a couple articles written on some of the issues, I should say, with the inpatient therapy services in Alaska. What are the inpatient options, and why is it important to? I'm sure there's important to have the inpatient option, so we can just what it is and why it's needed, and then maybe we can figure out why we need to have more robust outpatient options. Would that be fair?
Yeah. It's
okay.
Dr.
Wengel. Yeah.
Yeah. So I know, you know, recently there was a article in the paper that talked about some of the deficits in inpatient, and it talked about some of the challenges that go along with inpatient psychiatric hospitalization. I think oftentimes people interpret those kinds of ideas as why do we have it? We don't need it. It's a bad thing. But in reality, when you step back and look at it, it would be really difficult for a parent or a set of parents or a family system to be able to monitor someone who is at such an acute risk level that they were a danger to themselves or someone else 24 hours a day, day after day after day. They wouldn't be able to work. They wouldn't be able to sleep. They wouldn't be able to do really anything except monitor this individual. So having a safe place where that person can go and be monitored 24 hours a day, round the clock, day after day, until that crisis is over, really is crucial to help people so that they don't end their lives. Because what we know from research is that if someone tries to kill themselves and fails, oftentimes they have a lot of regret and remorse and gratitude that they were not successful in that. So we know if we can get them through that crisis that they will in fact get better. So inpatient is really necessary. However, if we can do something ahead of time to keep them from getting that seriously ill, then we can do them and their family and the community a lot of favors. And so that's really where having a really good, robust outpatient network is really helpful. And it's more than just, I went to see my therapist or I went to see my doctor and got my antidepressant or whatever. Like having a system that you can escalate them up and say, well, instead of seeing you once a month or once every 3 months, I'm going to see you every week, or I'm going to see you twice a week, right? Or I'm going to see you every single day. Having those kinds of systems in place is so crucial. And really, you know, when I came and Chris and I started working together, there wasn't a lot of that stuff. And so I'm really glad that there's been a huge effort in the community, not just from us, but in the community at large, in putting some of these systems in place. And we've been really fortunate to have, you know, key people in our organization that have put those in place for us at our locations, so that we can support people, whether it be through a day treatment program where they're there, you know, from 9 to 3 or 9 to 5, or intensive outpatient services where they can be there, or through, you know, the therapeutic preschool that Kristen runs, that has actually been here for a lot of years. But those kinds of systems keep people from escalating, so they don't need acute hospitalization.
Sure. Yeah. No, great. Kristen, any thoughts on inpatient? And I mean, people get this idea, they think of it's like the movies or the television show. We see this, and it's not actually like that. I mean, hopefully not most of the time. But, any thoughts on the importance of inpatient therapy for when it's justified and then having the resources available as an outpatient?
I mean, the thing I would add to what Dr. Wengel talked about is it is a necessary part of the continuum of care, but it's important that it's brief. So the purpose of inpatient hospitalization is to stabilize and to support immediate safety so that individuals can return to their communities. So I think brevity is an important part of when we're thinking about inpatient hospitalization. It's not a longer-term solution to a mental health difficulty, and we want to intervene if we can earlier in that treatment trajectory, so before it gets to that level of crisis.
Great, great. No, thank you. Let's go into a little bit about those escalation of services. So that, you know, and that's really what the show is, the crux of our show. We'll spend rest of today is going over what are the resources out there. We've identified the problem. Now we're going to identify, you know, the treatment plan for it. So, and I think let's start with the youngest. Let's mm-hmm. go there. Let's give Kristen this is your moment to shine for your little Tykes program. So I want to hear all about it and what it is and, what you do.
Yeah, so Little Tykes Therapeutic Services is our specialty program for young kids and families. We take a relational approach to treatment in the program. So we're typically involving the caregiver in almost every component of treatment because we know the relationship with the parent and the parent's ability to be protective, buffer the child from stress, and to provide those day-to-day interventions is really what's going to improve outcomes for kids. So often the lens that we're taking with our treatment protocols are teaching the parent to be the therapist. That's what our role is. So we provide direct coaching to the parent with a number of different types of treatment approaches. Sometimes we're in the room with the parent. Sometimes we're actually outside the room and coaching through a microphone and an earbud. We're providing skills training to the parent and really supporting them in providing effective interventions for their child. So we're trying to find the parent's superpower is how we describe it. Mm-hmm. Their superpower is the attention that they provide to the child in their relationship. So one important piece of the Little Tykes program is our therapeutic preschool model. It's an intensive outpatient program. So young kids come to our clinic for a half day of really robust mental health programming. It's for kids 3 to 5 years of age. And if you've been in a good high quality preschool program, it looks a lot like that, but it's all focused on social emotional learning. So we're teaching kids to name their feelings, to manage their feelings in their bodies, helping them prepare to be in a classroom when they are ready for kindergarten so they can follow basic directions and get help when they need help and kind of shift and change some of the patterns of interaction they have both with other children but also with adults as well. So the Little Tykes program has been in existence since before I was at Alaska Behavioral Health. I think it's probably 15 years in duration and it's been a really important part of our continuum of care. To my knowledge, we have never had a Little Tykes client be hospitalized for inpatient care. So I think if that's one little small research study, it really supports the idea that intensive outpatient services can be effective in mitigating some of those challenges.
Sure. And how would that, those children even be identified to like come? I mean, is this, I mean, kids are hard. I've raised some kids. They are hard. I've often been like, I'm a terrible, I was the best parent in the world before I had kids. Then I had kids and I'm like, oh man, this is way harder than I thought. But then, you know, you take a kid with maybe special needs or, I mean, how are those kids identified to even come to the program?
Yeah. So oftentimes kids are identified by their primary care provider or their pediatrician. But we're often the first other service system that the family has come into contact with. Many of our clients are in the foster care system and have been in multiple foster care placements. So they're identified by their child protection worker as needing some additional support and assistance because they're getting expelled from their early learning centers and preschools. Actually, young kids have the highest expulsion rate of any age group. So they're getting expelled and asked not to come back because they have disruptive behaviors that the teachers don't know how to handle.
Got it.
And then the other place they're getting identified is from our infant learning program. So at age three, they're aging out of that infant learning program and either kind of coming to us as a mental health program or getting engaged with the school district for some of those academic supports.
Got it. So a lot of it is they're starting to enter maybe regular preschools and the getting you know, kicked out or identified as having problems there.
Yeah, and people don't know how to support and help them. And they're definitely outside of the range of typical normative challenging behaviors for preschool-age kids. They get everyone's attention.
Sure. And where is Little Tykes available? Is it an Anchorage-only resources? Are you available out of the area?
Yeah, so it's physically located in Anchorage or in Midtown Anchorage. We have two classrooms, one that supports 3 to 4 year olds and one for 4 to 5 year olds. Our psychotherapy services, though, are available statewide. So we do have the ability to offer telehealth delivered services. And surprisingly, some of these therapies really lend themselves well to telehealth delivered services because we coach parents in the intervention. And that works fairly well through a telehealth platform.
Sure. And that brings, we have a call here, which I'm going to get to in a second, but that brings me to one of the emails we got. Now, this is an adolescent, a 17-year-old, but the mother has helped them find a therapist online and through telehealth. And she is not involved. The child does not want her to be on the appointments with them. So she's wondering, well, how does she know that how they're going, or if it's the right fit, or what are some of the issues that might exist with telehealth, whether you're the patient or maybe the parent? Yeah, Dr. Wangle, thoughts on that?
Yeah, I would say on the medicine side, I try to touch base with all of the parents of all of my clients on every visit that we have, because we're making some decision, whether that's to continue the medication as it is or to increase or decrease the medication. So I'm continuously touching base with the parents. I think parent involvement is so crucial to young people getting better. The 17 age is a little tricky because now you're trying to transition someone from being a kid to being an adult. And how do you hand off that? How do you hand the baton, so to speak, to that kid and let them sort of grow into that responsibility? And that's a tough call. But yeah, I think having contact with the therapist, even if they don't tell you a lot, but just to tell you, you know, hey, as a parent, this is how you can support what we're doing, or these are some of the things that you should watch out for that you can help us in our journey to recovery. Super helpful.
Yeah. Telehealth for you, Kristen. How's it been going? Or what? We use it a lot in our office. It's revolutionized things, you know, overnight. But it definitely has its difficulties.
Yeah, I think the difficulties we see from telehealth is lack of privacy, stable internet mm-hmm. connection, some of those like tangible difficulties. I think the difficulty that the caller was describing is not unique to telehealth, though. I think a parent's involvement in their child's mental health treatment is a really important question, and probably does change based on the child's age and the presenting concern. but I think there should be some involvement, and there can be contact that the parent has with the counselor outside of the individual, you know, therapy sure. appointment. And that's a service that most counselors will provide, like a family therapy session without the child present, what might be important. And it, like Dr. Wengel said, may be an opportunity to collect information, which will help the therapy collect information from the parent, but may be limited in what is shared with the parent.
Got it. Got it. Great. We have a call coming in from Fairbanks. I don't have a name here. Welcome to line one.
Hello?
Hello?
Hello? Can you hear me?
I can. Welcome to line one.
Okay. I have taught in the bush, and I hear what you have available in Anchorage, and I'm really glad it's expanding. But what are you doing for bush communities where internet is slow and there's a lot of issues? I had a student who in fourth grade was sent to Texas from a little village in Alaska in fourth grade. And then to evaluate his meds, they were going to send him back out of state. He had very little support going from foster care. He had to find his own place and his own job. I'm hoping this is changing, but right now he can find groups for alcohol and drug problems and suicide prevention, neither of which are his issue.
Got
and
it.
That's in Fairbanks.
In Fairbanks, okay. Well, thank you. And you know, luckily we have some good experts here today working on this problem. So, you know, Dr. Wengel, any thoughts on the story we just heard?
Yeah, so I've heard this story a lot of times, and I think there are a lot of organizations out there. I would say Alaska Behavioral Health is included in that people don't necessarily know about. We have two physical buildings located in Fairbanks. We have one building set up for kids. We have one building set up for adults. And then in addition to our kids building, we have a sort of a separate clinic inside of our clinic that's set up for veterans and their families specifically. And so we have a lot of resources in Fairbanks that people can get access to. And they have really rapid access. And we have prescribers up there that can take care of medications. We have therapists on site for adults and kids who can take care of those kinds of issues. And I think, you know, the access up there is really, I think it's really good right now. It sort of waxes and wanes, you know, with the supply of the professionals working in the field. But more to her comment about sort of the Bush community, I think, you know, there's recently been legislation that's passed that previously hindered some of the ability to prescribe if you were not physically in the room with someone. And so with some of these updates to some of the telemedicine legislation that's happened, as the rules and how those laws are going to be practiced come out from the medical and nursing boards, then I think it's going to really expand our ability to give access to people who are not within one of the Anchorage or Fairbanks communities. So I'm really optimistic that this problem is being solved. I know that personally, I've done a lot of work since I got here to try to reach out to communities, whether it be like Kodiak or I think Juneau has a really good system inside of their community. But I think other communities like Seward or Homer, they don't have as big a robust system. So we've been trying to outreach to those communities to provide them telehealth services, whatever we are allowed to within the legal confines that we're restricted to. But the problem is getting better. And I'm really optimistic with some of the legislation that got passed that it will continue to get even better and really open up access to telemedicine throughout the entire state. So time will tell, but I'm super optimistic about what's happening right now.
Yeah, rural Alaska with internet access has been a big problem. I know they are working on that. Now there's even Starlink, which has really been a great resource for a lot of places, a little bit more reliable in rural parts. But we want to keep Alaskan patients in Alaska. I mean, that's the goal.
Yeah, there's a right? whole movement to what they call bring the kids home, because it's what this lady is saying. Someone gets sent out to Texas or Idaho or someone, they get put in this facility for several months. And so we want to bring them back because we want to have the resources here. But, you know, I would say I've had really good success with people going to either local fire stations or police departments mm-hmm. in some of the bush areas to get better access to internet. And those facilities in the communities I've worked with have been very receptive to let people come in to attend medical appointments. And so that's been a tremendous benefit. Or to a local school who usually has pretty reliable internet, and the school will let them have access and sometimes even a room to talk with their doctor or their counselor. And so, you know, I think those communities they have a lot of willingness We just got to be willing to ask in some cases.
Mm-hmm.
But I do really think that the problem is getting better.
Good. Good. We're going to take another quick break. When we come back, we're going to go a little bit into, I want to give you guys an opportunity to talk about the PHP program, your partial hospitalization program. So I think that has an awesome potential for, you know, keeping people getting intensive therapy for outpatients. So we'll talk about that. You are listening to Line One, your health connection. If you have a question or a comment for our guests, call us statewide, 1-888-353-5752. In Anchorage, 907-550-8433. After this short break, we'll continue our discussion on mental health resources for Alaskan youth with Alaska Behavioral Health Counselor Kristen Mortensen and CMO Dr. Kurt Wengel.
You're listening to Line One from Alaska Public Media. You can find Line One on alaskapublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Public Media is designed for and made possible by the communities it serves. Monies generated through estate and deferred gifts enable public radio to provide our listeners, you, with the level of programming excellence you've come to expect. It may also reduce income and estate taxes. Consult your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more.
Welcome back to Line One, your health connection on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Dr. Justin Clark. I'm joined by Alaska Behavioral Health Counselor Kristen Mortensen and CMO Dr. Kurt Wengel. Call us toll-free statewide, 1-888-353-5752, 888-353-5752. In Anchorage, 550-8433, 907-550-8433, or email us at line1@alaskapublic.org. Okay, we have a couple calls and a couple emails. I'll try to filter in here, but I definitely want to get across here the PHP program, which stands for Partial Hospitalization Program. I think it's a great opportunity or a great resource for our youth. Dr. Wengel, you want to talk about that first?
Absolutely. So PHP as an idea is sort of serves two purposes. One is to what we were talking about earlier in order to prevent hospitalization or prevent escalation of symptoms. And then the other is as someone is coming out of an inpatient setting, then they can be admitted to a partial PHP day program so that they don't get readmitted to the hospital. So what we know from research is that someone coming out of an acute inpatient setting is at a higher risk for suicide or self-harm than someone who's not coming out of that kind of setting, whether they went in for suicidal ideation or thoughts about suicide or a suicide attempt, whether that was present or not, we know that those risks are higher coming out. And that's for a lot of reasons. But if they go to a partial program, then often we can mitigate some of those things, but also we can have eyes on them for much of the day. This is really helpful, particularly for parents who are working, right? They can't keep their eyes on their kids all the time. Maybe they're not ready to go back to the stressful environment of school, but going to a day treatment program that has school incorporated in it can be really helpful. So we launched the PHP program pretty recently, and we are targeting right now the 9 to 15 year old age group, really because we see a lot of need in that age group, but also we don't see a lot of other service options for some of those kids. And so that's the group that we've started with, but we do have a goal and an anticipation that we're going to extend out to all ages. We also have 18 plus, but for the sake of this conversation, we're talking about kids. That's a really good program. Kids come in the morning, they have an opportunity to interact with a medication prescriber 1 to 2 times a week, so we can get their medications really dialed in really quickly. But they also have access to a therapist every day. They come, we provide them food and snacks, but also we give them the learning opportunity, like Kristen was talking about earlier, for that kind of social emotional learning and helping them develop those skills, whether it be through physical play or role playing or stuff like that. We're helping them work through those skills so that they can develop a really robust internal system to deal with those stressors that they're dealing with. It's a really new system to Alaska. It's been around a while in other places, but because of what you're talking about earlier, some insurance limitations, there were limitations by the state to launch programs like this, but the state has issued a waiver. They're letting us launch programs like this now. And that's been really helpful, not only for PHP, but for a lot of different
systems throughout the state. And so what we're starting to see is lots of different types of service modalities come online because the state has now issued this ability to do this. So I think PHP is a great opportunity. I do see that it prevents people from getting hospitalized. I've had a number of patients of my own that I was concerned were starting to worsen in their symptoms, and we send them to the program, they get better, they come back. And every time you admit someone to the hospital, it gets harder and harder for them to recover. We tend to need higher and higher doses of medication. And so anytime we can prevent that, the better off these kids are. So it's turned out to be a really phenomenal program. The person who's leading it is really got her heart and soul into it and really just making it an amazing program for kids. And by and large, the feedback we get from the kids themselves is, it was an amazing program. I learned so much, and just a lot of gratitude that they were able to attend it.
Great. Great. Well, thanks for that summary. I want to take a call here. Go to line 6. John. John, you are on line 1. Can you hear me?
Hi. How are you doing? I was calling because I was curious about whether or not people who work in this field have a criteria for evaluating chemical exposure in these patients. It seems very surprising that children come in with neurological disorders so early in life. And the question is, are these possibly related to either exposures of chemicals or epigenetics associated with long-term exposure in the parents and so on? Is there a criteria for that kind of evaluation and reviewing the needs of the patients? Thank you.
Yeah, John, was there a particular chemical you were thinking of? Like, was it a particular idea?
No, the problem with chemicals, unfortunately, in modern American society is this extreme distribution. You get lots of times people are exposed even to things like compounds that are present in plastics, for example. They're excreted into solutions and things like that, baby formula, everything like that would have chemicals that are released at a relatively low level, but they have high activity toward responses in the immune system, for example.
Yeah.
And no one has really characterized those very well, as far as I know. But the reality of it is, part of the problem could be associated with these exposures as well. I mean, it's a universal problem, because in America we have been so lax on use of chemicals at large.
Thanks for your comment, John. Appreciate it. Dr. Wangle or Kristen, is that an issue that you guys are seeing? So
chemical exposure, I would say, of all kinds. To his comment about general chemicals, I would say that's not certainly screened for as much, unless you're looking for general medical stuff like heavy metal toxins, lead poisoning, mm-hmm. stuff like that. Those, we have really good, robust medical systems to evaluate those things. If you're looking at chemicals as far as like alcohol or substances like cocaine, heroin, meth, then we do have those kinds of systems to evaluate for those kinds of things, because they, depending on what age that they were exposed, particularly in utero, they can develop different types of neurological disorders. Those types of things are typically evaluated by a neuropsychological exam or evaluation. That's not something that we do a lot of, but those types of testing are available. And I would say the most robust testing exists, like for fetal alcohol syndrome or in utero alcohol exposure. But it can help guide some of our treatment, but sure, we do have things for sure. That.
And over time, I imagine we'll learn more about what's
for sure
what's going on out there. Okay, let's go to line 7. Annie, you're calling from Homer.
Yeah, hi. I'm want to ask, you initially said that, you know, part of the treatment of these children is, you know, dealing with the environment that they come from, and that environment usually is the family. And my question is this. From my own experience, I found that when my child was in residential care, I had to pay a lot to go see him, so did his father, and just because he was taken out of this community. And I thought, well, I have the funds to do that. I mean, it was a stretch, but I had the funds. There are so many people who do not have that ability to be or even see their child during residential treatment. And I wondered if you guys knew of any resource, state or private, that address this issue so that families could indeed be part of the treatment instead of waiting until their child is released, so to speak, and come back. So that's my question.
Annie, great question. Yeah, thanks for your call. Kristen, you've been in the community a long time.
Yeah.
Any thoughts on this?
Yeah, I think this is one of the biggest challenges with residential treatment, particularly out-of-state residential treatment, is the difficulty with engagement of family members in the child's treatment, because the child is, you know, 5,000 miles away from the family, the community, and the cultural group. So I do know there are resources. You know, Medicaid does provide some limited resources for parents to be involved in residential treatment, to visit their child during residential treatment. But I think that's why we see a lot of challenges when kids return home, because the family system issue hasn't been really fully addressed. And I think there's more of an opportunity to do that when we have community-based services and kids are living with their families and we have access to parents, and we can work on those problems in real time. So I hear her concern, and I hear that from many, many families, that, you know, that we didn't get to practice some of these skills, you know, in the school, in the family home, and in residential treatment. Yes, they were able to be successful, but they had lots of structure and multiple staff members to support them. And the transition, I think, to a step down program can be helpful. So something like a partial hospitalization as an interim step could be helpful, and some more robust like intensive outpatient services to support kids as they come out of residential treatment oftentimes can be helpful in those situations. But it's a challenge. I think it's one of the biggest challenges of residential care.
Yeah. Well, maybe telehealth can take the edge off a little bit of bringing the families, or at least their faces and voices and things into care. But it's not a substitute for being there in person.
Right.
Yeah. We have another call coming all the way from Craig, Alaska. Welcome to line one. Oh, looks like we may have lost that call. We'll see if he calls back. Okay, well, we have about 6-7 more minutes here. I want to, another thing that we can talk about, I'd like to talk about the school-based services. So this is something that, we don't want kids taken out of school, if possible. At least to a lot of deficits. But what is what's available out there that you guys are doing for school-based services?
Yeah, so we have a fairly robust school-based program both in Anchorage and in Fairbanks. And we saw over the years similar challenges. It takes 3 hours of time for if a child gets picked up at school, brought to our clinic, and then brought back to school. They're missing about 3 hours of instruction. Also really challenging for parents and their work schedule to do that on a regular basis. So we have several schools in Anchorage and also in Fairbanks, in the Fairbanks School District, where we have clinicians co-located at schools. They're part of the school community. And we have counseling services available to youth at those schools so they can access them directly. Referrals come through different sources, oftentimes the health center or the school counselor, and they see a provider who's part of the Alaska Behavioral Health team, and during the school day they can do that, so there's less loss of instruction, and it's just the setting where kids are already getting other needs met. So it's just, we found, you know, coming to a clinic in Midtown Anchorage is just oftentimes a barrier for some families because of transportation or the time that it takes to do that. And when we can go to where kids are already getting their needs met, it's a way to access kids in different ways.
Yeah, yeah. Any comments on that, Dr. Wengel?
Yeah, I had not previously done school-based services before I came up here and was super encouraged that we're sending people to the school. And, you know, in sort of thinking about when I was a kid, thinking about a school counselor, I didn't understand what they were and certainly didn't understand their credentialing. And as I got older, realizing that, you know, school counselor means a lot of different things to a lot of different people, and depending on what city or state you live in. But here, where we're able to send out, you know, professional counselors to these kids, it really gives them a good opportunity to get high quality services right where they're at to really reduce the amount of time and instruction that they miss. So I think it's a great service for the families.
Excellent. We have call for another time for another caller here. We got Mary from the Matsu Valley. Hi, Mary.
Hi. Yeah, I'm calling in regards to kind of segues into you talking about the school services, and we have great school services up here in the Northern Valley. I can't say enough about the good that they do. But what are the options if a teen regresses and starts going back into the behaviors that got them into trouble in the beginning, like where it required hospitalization with a discovery unit or what have you? And if they refuse residential care, what are the options after that?
Good question, Mary. All right. So which one of you guys wants to comment on this one?
So if I'm understanding her question correctly, it's if someone gets better initially, it sounded like mm-hmm. someone was in discovery and then they get better and they're in school services. Partly it depends on what service it is that they need. You know, if they're coming out of discovery, the probability that they're on medication is pretty high. If they need to return to medication, then depending on what medication that they're on would allow us to see them either via teleservices in their home or with their parent, or having them bring into the clinic for some medications that are required to have in-person evaluations done. But I think certainly we have good access to care right now, where when I first came up here, we actually didn't have any in-house child prescribers. And now we have several in-house child prescribers and we're recruiting more all the time. But we also have a lot more adult prescribers, depending on how old this person is. So I think if we need to get them back into prescribing services to get them access, we have really good, robust access right now. And we don't have a wait list, so you can call and get services right away. If they need more intensive therapy services, then again, that's going to depend on the level of service that they need. You know, running like a day treatment program like partial is hard if you've got a little pocket here and a little pocket there. So we have consolidated that into Anchorage. But if they needed that service, then that would be certainly a service that would be available to them. So it really just depends on the need of that individual.
Yeah, I'm trying to keep people out of the inpatient because I'm sure, yeah, they don't want to go to the inpatient.
Yeah, they don't want to go and we don't want to send them.
Yeah. We just have about 2 minutes left, you guys. We got through a lot of stuff, and we could certainly get through more. But I want to give you each just a short period of time here. Just any closing thoughts, any ideas you wanted to get across to our listeners. Kurt, we'll start with you.
Sure. Yeah. So I think you know a couple of big thoughts that I have is starting my journey into being a mental health professional was really interesting, and seeing. You know, before I went into medical school, I certainly didn't understand a lot of the science that goes into a lot of these treatment modalities. And so really just the idea that there's evidence behind what we do. It's not just hokey. It's not just flaky. We're not just doing things on a whim. We're doing things because there's true scientific backing for what we do, whether it's the medication or the therapeutic, you know, talk services that we provide. I think there is a big misnomer that there's a 6-month wait list or something like that to get into services. And there's not, right? You can call and get into services really rapidly. Depending on the type of service that you want, you could potentially get in the same day or the next day. And so, you know, you just got to reach out and give us a call. Our number, wherever you are in the state, you can call 907-563-1000 and get a hold of someone. If you visit our website at akbh.org, then you can find the local number for whatever place is closer to you, whether you're in the Anchorage area or more in the interior. But we have services and we want to help people get better. And so that's yeah. really the message that I have for people is that you can get better and you just got to stick it out and go through the program. And it is going to be work, but you can get there.
Thanks. Kristen, you took up most of your time, but any closing thoughts?
I have two pieces to add. One is that mental health services work, which is what Kurt said, but I want to reinforce that they are effective and they work. And I just want to encourage people to get help earlier. When you think you're struggling with a mental health concern, talk to your primary care provider, get a screening, come in for an evaluation, because we know we can be more effective if we get to you and get you some help before things get to a crisis point. So get help earlier. Let's reduce the stigma that mental health is somehow a personal deficit or we can will ourselves out of it. Mm-hmm. It's a medical concern that we can help with.
Yeah. Great information today. I really hope this helped out some of our listeners. I want to give special thanks to our guests for being with us today. Thanks to our audio engineer, Dave Waldron, and our producer, Madeline Rose. You can find more information on this and previous programs on our website at alaskapublic.org. Let us know your thoughts or suggestions by emailing us at line1@alaskapublic.org. This has been Line One, Your Health Connection. I'm your host, Dr. Justin Clark. Stay healthy, Alaska.
Line 1 is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Learn more about Line 1 and listen online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.